right now.
I had mentioned earlier what a big week this is, the Bumper to Bumper show for the hockey community. Russo Radio coming up at 5:30. We've got Mark Messier with Lou Nanny tomorrow. We've got Bill Guerin in studio on Thursday. And I did neglect to mention, on top of all of that, as if all that was not enough, we've got Johnny Athletic to help us break down Game 3, Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay, Tampa Bay. He is on the Kinetico Water Systems hotline. Do you think Tampa Bay has another comeback in them, or is it already over after Colorado's 7-0 destruction of Stanley Cup immortality in the most recent game Saturday night?
Yeah, I'm glad that you asked me this, Dan, because I'm actually at the airport ready to hop a flight down there.
Nice.
To get there and see it, because I have to be there to chronicle it and use my expertise to share with the sporting public. But, boy, Colorado does look good, don't they? I mean, they're steamrolling, and they score a bunch of goals, and, hey, that should make everyone happy in the hockey community. So some excitement. But the one thing I did, I heard a lot of kvetching about there's no close games in the NBA Finals. So that's why, you know, the sport is bad.
There you go. There you go.
And now everything's great. So just interesting how that works.
Johnny K's appearance, as always, is presented by Beyond the Pond. Beyond the Pond, the continued loyal sponsor to the Johnny Athletic segment, although they might pull that relationship. They might want to distance themselves after that early cheap shot after the 7-0 final score on Saturday night. We got a lot of ground to cover, including a fascinating trade proposal offered up by One of Us Hollywood Actor Guy. That ain't going to happen, but I like, yeah. It's a good talker because I like what it represents. But before we do that, I want to deviate a little bit and get to something off the beaten track as it pertains to the Wolves, but is related to the National Basketball Association. I think a greater number of people all the time find myself utterly and completely done with Kyrie Irving. And
yeah,
I blame you. I blame many of you in the basketball community for far too long getting way too aroused by what he can do on a court, which physically might be unprecedented. You know, his handle, that there's nobody who can do the things that he can do. And, of course, what's always left out in that evaluation is, what kind of teammate is he? Is he a guy you can count on? Is he a guy who seems to be more even keel? And all of this is directly related to where I think Steph Curry, maybe until now, maybe people are going to figure it out, has had a raw deal. Because there are people out there in your community who would laugh at the comparison of those two players, laugh, and say, are you kidding me? It's not even close. And I'd say to you, you ain't evaluating as basketball players then. You're evaluating on what visually gives you the greatest amount of stimulation, and you can't keep doing that, especially when it's a guy who has apparently burned another bridge.
Yeah, I'll say this, Dan, in terms of there's two things that really drive Kyrie Irving's popularity, if you really want to say it. One is, like you said, he has an overwhelmingly talented player from a finishing around the basket, from a handle, from a slick kind of mixtape sort of scenario. You watch Kyrie Irving, he can be mesmerizing when he is out there. The second reason why I think he gets a lot of attention is that clearly he is still valued from a front office standpoint. I mean, even though he did kind of burn all those bridges, especially in Boston, but in Cleveland as well, the Nets couldn't wait to shower a max contract on him and get him in there with Kevin Durant and team up. So the coverage is dictated a little bit by that, but I do think that his unreliability, his just completely sort of out of left field type of, the flat earth sort of approach to life here and then the vaccinations and all of that has certainly gotten him considerable scrutiny within the media as well. And I do think that there is a pretty vocal contingent of people that would say, it has gotten to the point now where he is certainly not a quote unquote foxhole guy, someone you can depend on to be there for you, someone who is going, who you can say, okay, we have Kyrie Irving. Now we are a legitimate contender. I think that going into whatever happens now in this next chapter of his career, I think he's going to be in a little bit more of a prove it mode type of a situation. And this is a player who does not take kindly or believe that he has anything to prove. So I would step very cautiously if I were a team, including the Brooklyn Nets, who is considering committing anything more than a year or two to him, just because you have no idea what you're going to get.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him. I know how good he is, and I know you could always say, but what if you're the GM of the team where he settles down again and that doesn't ever play any other place? That becomes his home. I wouldn't want him here. I wouldn't want him anywhere. I just wouldn't want it. At this point, basically, how many times has he ended up where he wanted to be? At least we thought for five minutes, and then it's like, no, it's the wrong flavor, not working out for me. Now I want to do something else.
Yeah, it's been at least a couple of ones here, because I still remember in Boston, the year that he was technically up for a contract extension, he started the season saying, I'll be here as long as you want if you'll have me. That was the quote.
Yeah.
And everyone thought, okay, he's all in with the Celtics. And then he essentially imploded that team from within with the way that he went about things. Then he went to Brooklyn and got with his buddy KD, and everything was going to be great. But then comes the vaccination battle, which wasn't even really a statement on the vaccination. If you listen to him, it was a higher plane, a higher being that he was trying to reach, and it becomes all of this. And the only reason that he continues to get chances, and I believe he'll probably get another one, is that he is really, really talented. But the one interesting thing that we're hearing now is that the Knicks could be a possible destination, and Tibbs is there, and Tibbs very much wanted Kyrie Irving when Jimmy Butler first arrived. And there were a lot of whispers and rumors when Butler first got here that Kyrie wasn't going to be far behind. They obviously didn't get that done, but that would be a very intriguing pairing, just to watch those two work together on a daily basis or on a semi-weekly basis whenever Kyrie decides to show up for work.
One of us Hollywood actor guy, Josh Broughton, has concocted yet another potential deal that he says, in terms of the salary cap machine and the numbers, works. It again involves almost every one of his deals involves Carl Anthony Towns, which is intriguing in of itself, which we'll get to his own reasons for that in a minute. Here's his latest one. He's got us working a deal with the Sacramento Kings, in which the Wolves send Cat and the Wolves' number one pick, 19 overall, to the Sacramento Kings for your guy, Harrison Barnes, Sabonis, and the number 4 overall first round pick in the 2022 NBA draft. Now, we have no reason to think that Tim Connelly has any interest in moving on Cat, but leaving that aside, would that intrigue you at all if it actually were a real possibility, or do you think it would be absolutely absurd to even consider it?
Yeah, I mean, first I'll say this, just to put it all out there, that, and it's not a surprise to anyone, but I fully expect, starting July 1st or whenever that is, that the Wolves will offer Carl Anthony Towns a maximum contract extension. I expect him to say, yes, I will sign this deal, and everything will go forward that way. So I think that's where we're all headed, barring some unforeseen circumstance that comes up. So I think that's where it's going, and I think that's the right thing to do. Our guy, Josh Broughton, is very much in the camp of you can't, win a championship with Carl Anthony Towns, and that this would be a way of balancing the roster a little bit more. I do understand some people who say, man, if you sign Carl Anthony Towns to a $200 million deal, you're talking, over $50 million a year toward the end of it. Is giving that kind of money to a big man the smart thing to do in this day and age with the way that the game has evolved. I understand those concerns. Me personally, I think his game is going to age fine. I think he will be a really good complement to Anthony Edwards. But if you look at that package that Josh Broughton put together, would it make the Timberwolves think about it? If you could get a Jaden Ivey or Keegan Murray at four and Sabonis and Harrison Barnes, a super reliable vet guy, it's not the worst package that has been put in front of me with Carl Anthony Towns trades, not even by Josh Broughton himself. So I think that's one of the more ones that would at least make you think about it a little bit. But again, I'm not for trading Carl Anthony Towns. I'd like to see him continue to grow with Anthony Edwards, and I think that's what's going to happen.
Well,
that is a nice package.
It would take a Cojones the size of church bells, I think, to actually do it, because I'm with you. I wouldn't do it. But then again, that doesn't necessarily mean that in 4 years we might look back and say, you know what, that looks kind of intriguing now, because we don't know where this thing is going. Part of Broughton's point is, nice player, I like him, great shooter. Sabonis, the perfect fit alongside Ant and Jaden, given that the Joker's untouchable. Sabonis, he describes as the closest thing we have in the modern NBA to the big redhead. Do you agree?
Oh, I mean, I love Sabonis' game. I think he's a really good passer. I would like to see when you pair someone with Ant, I like Towns' perimeter shooting a little bit more, because I think that just opens up the lane a lot more for Edwards to go to the basket. So I'm of the mind that I think Towns is a little bit better fit, but I do think having Sabonis work the elbow, find Ant cutting, find McDaniels, who's a really good cutter, cutting to the basket, spreading the ball around. Certainly Sabonis is a really good rebounder as well. So he's a really, really good player. And I'll tell you that there were people within the Timberwolves organization when he became available, when the Pacers were making him available, were looking into it and at least exploring and sniffing around a little bit back then in February before he got dealt. So there's certainly people that like Sabonis, and not necessarily for Cat, to pair with Cat. And I don't think he brings the defensive element that you'd really want, but
no.
From an offensive standpoint, I love his game. He's really, really good.
All right, so there are rumors out that the Wolves have expressed some interest in, or at least have reached out to the Atlanta Hawks for the possibility of adding Clint Capela to the group, to the club. What do you make of that? Do you buy it? Do you think there is serious? Is it serious, or is it just sort of stuff that is being thrown out because it is indeed draft week? And does it at all intrigue you?
Well, I would say this. Atlanta is very active and involved in a lot of conversations. They are the team that the Wolves are hoping to avoid being, in terms of last year they were coming off of a run to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they thought that the improvement was just going to be linear, and so that they're just going to keep on going, and they took a big step back. And so now they're in deal-making mode, and the Wolves are trying to avoid having a step back going into next year. And so there is some absolute sense that is made by having those two in talks together, and I do think that they are real. I think that there have been real conversations with the Hawks about Capela. I mean, how close is it? I don't know about that. I don't think that anything is imminent, but I think that those talks are for real. And so do I like it? It is very intriguing because, you know, I think people look at the pairing of Towns and Capela and you say, well, Towns is the center. But we have seen many iterations of Timberwolves lineups where Towns is a center really in name only.
Yep.
And I think that Capela, as a rim protector, as a rebounder, as a super active guy, could be the kind of center that would complement Towns well. And would that mean that technically Towns is playing a little bit more at the four? Sure, but we saw him play at the four with Taj Gibson at center. Even when Jared Vanderbilt is in the lineup, Vanderbilt's technically the center with the way that he plays compared to what Towns does. So I don't think it would be that big of an adjustment for Carl Anthony Towns, and I would like to have some more size there and some more rebounding and toughness, and Capela could provide that. What would it take? that's the interesting part. I don't know. Malik Beasley and pieces, Bulmero and Beasley, something like that. That's just me speculating. I have no idea if that's been talked about, but it's enough to say that, yes, I want to see that team explore it and go down that road, because I do think that there is a potential pretty good fit with a big energy guy in that five spot and putting Towns a little bit more at the four and allowing them to match up against bigger teams better than they could before.
I'm going to be intrigued with any name that can do some of the dirty work things we're talking about and can do some rim protecting and doesn't need the ball a lot, right? I mean, do not need to run a lot of plays for him, and I don't think he gets offended by that either. I mean, he can do some damage, but that to me would be why I'd be intrigued. How much is he making? What's his contract? He just signed a contract extension last year, correct?
Yeah, he's making around, I think, like $19, $20 million a year. So is it a lot of money? Yeah, but is it max money? No. Like, let's just say Rudy Gobert, right? I mean, Gobert is making $40 million. Like, that is a number that makes you gulp and say, well, luxury tax, here we come. I think that the Wolves could structure their cap situation to where you could bring in Clint Capella and still not be a luxury tax team necessarily. And so it's not a bad contract as long as you believe that he's going to have the bounce and the energy for the next 3 years, which I think is how long the contract goes. I think I don't think it's prohibitive from a financial standpoint at all. I'll put it that way.
He just turned 28. So he's not ancient by any means. Right in his prime. Yep. I'll admit, I don't know what kind of season he had this last year. I do know when I've watched him in general, I like his activity. And we've talked about what the Wolves need, and he does seem to represent that. Now, is there another player that can give them a higher level of the same sort of production and performance? I'm willing to listen to that, too. But I've got no problems with putting him in the mix, depending, again, on obviously what the price tag is going to be. We're at 19. That's at least how we're going to start this thing. I heard you, I don't know if it was with Sauce, with somebody reminding folks that, you know, if you have three twos and you have, you're at 19 in the NFL, you feel like you can move your way up to at least 10 or maybe even 8 if you start packaging those things. But second round picks in the NBA are not valued to the same level as they are in the National Football League, even though, you know, Tim Connelly is proof that you can obviously get greatness from time to time in round two. So what is realistic in terms of moving up for this club, and how hard do you think they're going to be trying to do so?
I mean, I think they're going to look at it, Dan, but I do think it's going to be difficult to move up in this draft. If you talk to people within the league, and I had a piece this morning just kind of like laying out the whole landscape of what this draft looks like, that, you know, there's a lot of kind of, I don't know if confusion, but certainly there's a lot of debate once you get to like pick 12, 13, 14, and then going all the way down to 40, 43, it's kind of eye of the beholder when you talk about the prospects and the fits and things like that on who goes where. And so depending on how the draft breaks, they could get a guy that they really like at 19, or, you know, there could be a guy gone. And so, you know, if you wanted to move up, I think a lot of people, myself included, look at a guy like Duke's Mark Williams, who is a traditional big, who is athletic, who had, you know, a space eater, a glass eater type of a guy. And that might be a good fit for the Timberwolves, but, you know, he's probably be gone by 13 or 14. So you'd have to go up to get him, but I just don't know that the opportunity is going to be there, because once you start getting teams who are at 12 and 13 to drop down to 19 or 20, they might look at that as too far of a drop if they have a guy that they really like there. So I would guess that the more likely scenario is that the Wolves stick at 19 and make a pick rather than being able to, you know, see a guy sliding that they really like and go up and get him, because it's going to take probably a little bit more to entice some of those teams right up where they would need to go to part with than they're willing to do. And so I think that Connelly would probably lean more toward, hey, I'm going to trust myself, find a good rotation player at 19. He also really told me a few weeks ago he also really likes the pick at 40 and thinks that there could be some good opportunities there. And then maybe you look at draft and stash with those other picks in the second round or trading those for future picks or things like that.
Let's get a pause in. I got a couple other juicy rumors I want to run by you from the draft heading into draft week, and I want to get to some Twin stuff as well, including some controversial questions about the future of this club as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline. Because believe it or not, that's if it's not right around the corner, it already should be on people's minds. Johnny Athletic Part 2. Don't forget Russo Radio previewing Stanley Cup Finals Game 3, which you can hear
to the fan.
Johnny, do we have any new juicy rumors related to D'Lo, or is it pretty much status quo what we thought, that they're keeping their eyes and ears open, but they're very fully prepared to start the season with him?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's still status quo with that. I don't think anything has changed. I will say, from what I understand, like there have been a few, I don't even know how to describe it, cursory conversations with teams, so it's not like there haven't been any talks at all. There's been certainly inquiries from teams about, hey, what would it take, and have been thinking about it. So I don't think that they are holding on to a distressed asset that nobody wants. There's been some interest, I will say, that has been expressed, but certainly nothing that's gotten to a point of, you know, of deal making or anything yet. I mean, that's the thing about this week, really starting today, going into Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's when the discussions go from, you know, ideas to actual realities. And there's actually, you know, more substance behind a lot of the offers and stuff. So things could pick up eventually or quickly over the next couple of days and change the outlook. But as of right now, I don't get the sense that, you know, we're close to a D'Lo blockbuster where he's going somewhere else.
Let's get to your Minnesota Twins. They're off today. They've got the Cleveland Commanders. No, the Guardians. Guardians, yeah, coming to town for the start of a three-game series. And who'd have thunk it? It's Cleveland, not the White Sox, that at least for the moment seem to represent a legitimate threat. Cleveland, unlike the White Sox, has ascended above 500. They're one of the hotter teams in ball recently. They've shaved off, I think, four games from the lead over the course of the last week to 10 days, and they just took two out of three from one of baseball's elite clubs, the Los Angeles Dodgers. So I mentioned earlier, I think it's what keeps me interested in a baseball season, the slog that it is the idea that, all right, we got the two top teams in the division, for whatever that's worth in this division, going head-to-head. My sources say we ain't going to fill up the target field for any of those games. So I don't know if that's still people holding back on the Twins. It's not really even knowing who plays for the Cleveland Guardians at this point. I don't know. But are you at all curious or interested in the showdown series, the fact that we've got, I think, eight games against Cleveland over the course of the next couple of weeks?
Well, I do think that you like you said, Dan, with as many games as are played in a baseball season, you'd certainly have to identify the pockets that potentially could mean something. And I always kind of shake my head a little bit when you see the discourse, you know, around these games, and so much of it is, well, it doesn't matter. You know, it's only one of 162. It doesn't matter. But I think you have to find these little areas of the schedule where it does matter. And this one probably does. You have a team that is starting to find some confidence in itself, that is making a charge, and that, you know, if the series goes the wrong way, that could certainly pave the way for a crisis of confidence from the Timberwolves, from the Twins' perspective as well. So I'm going to be watching it and just kind of seeing how the Twins respond to that. I don't think the Twins are good enough at this point to dismiss the Guardians or the White Sox or anyone in their division. So I think that they should look at this chance to really kind of assert themselves a little bit more and say, hey, it's, you got a nice little story here lately, and I know that no one really believed in you, and you're on the upstart, but we're going to knock you back down to earth. Like, that should be the goal of this series and really of these, of the couple of meetings that are coming up here, and to get a little bit more breathing room back in it, because it's getting a little tight right now. It's one game, right? So yes. I like that when teams come in and they have a little roll going, and let's see how the home club responds to it.
Yeah, I do too. I'm kind of intrigued by it. Look, the team's record, the Twins' record, is I think tied for the weakest among division leaders. It's not a dominant record by any means. It's, you know, they've handled themselves pretty well given the number of injuries that they have. But I think some of the hesitation probably is still related to that. Still a question of where are we really going to go with the pitching staff. But for the purposes of this week or the next couple, I think it is more intriguing to have a head-to-head matchup to see something where you say, okay, maybe we get a little better read on this club. We get a little bit of read on whether there's even going to be a race in the division, because I think it felt for a while as if there was a chance the Twins were going to be able to meander at 8 or 9 above 500, and that was going to be enough because no one else within the division was seemingly even making a move.
Well, and also, too, Dan, just as a, if you're a baseball fan, like, what purpose does it serve to, like, go into these series with, you know, some kind of malaise about it? And it's like, ah, well, let's just see what happens. And if they win, they win. If they don't, they don't, kind of a thing. Like, I like to have stakes on games. Yes. I like to have it. I like to get excited about it and have it be meaningful. And one of the good things about this twin star and the way that they have gone about it is that they have put themselves in a position to play games that matter a little bit in late June and to at least have some intrigue about the first place in the division and that sort of stuff. So that's fun. So like I don't want to see like if they lose game one to say, well, it's over, blow it all up. You don't want to see that, but you do want to see some intensity. You want to see some excitement. And you want to see a couple of teams competing hard and getting after it. Hopefully that's what we see in this thing.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we will. Last item for you. Guardsy wants to know whether you effectively or successfully got into the Andrew Wiggins will.
If I didn't, it hasn't been for lack of effort, man. I'm leaving it all on the court, if I will say. With a couple of the odes that we've done over the weekend. I will say, though, that the big piece that I wrote right after that he won it, it was a little bit in response to a lot of Timberwolves fans out there who I get it. They're feeling wronged. They're feeling like Andrew did not give the requisite effort when he was here, and sometimes they were absolutely right about that. But you see a lot of the reaction of, oh, look at his stats. He's the exact same player that he was here, or the exact same player as Harrison Barnes was, or this or that. He's just playing with great players, and that's the only reason that Wiggins is on a winner now, is he's playing with Hall of Famers. It's true, that is a main reason, but I don't see how you can watch the way that he played in that series and the intensity that he showed and the rebounding and the defense and kind of the clutch scoring here and there, and say that it's not a different player. I mean, he absolutely was a different player. And that does not mean that you can't be frustrated with the lack of effort that he showed here at times. I was as frustrated as anybody with kind of the malaise that he had a lot of times here. But I'm also acknowledging that it looks like there was an evolution. There was a growth in him as in his approach and his game. And so he earned that, and anyone who says otherwise, you can't argue with them, because the Warriors, I don't think, win that title without Andrew Wiggins. That's the way that it went down in this series, and everyone out there was saying the same thing.
Guardsy, you want to get in on this?
I've said enough on Andrew Wiggins.
Okay.
I hope it works out for Johnny and Jace and everybody else is trying to get into the will. I hope it does.
Wow. Hey, because of the way that he played, that will is going to get a lot bigger coming up here.
We'll see.
I'm staking my claim right now.
We'll see.
When's his contract up?
He's eligible for a contract.
An extension.
Year,
right? He's got a year left.
So one more year.
Yep, one more year. So okay. Right. We'll see. I think he's going to get paid this summer. I think it's going to be pretty sizable.
Well, they apparently, I don't know how, they must have a really good capologist there, too. Sort of
they
like
don't care about the cap. They don't care about the luxury tax. They don't care about any of that.
Well, but they also seem to find interesting loopholes as well. They've been very effective at finding ways to, shall we say, legally, I think, isn't their payroll like $500
million? Yeah, I think it's going to be up around $400 million and up north of that next year. And really it is like, it's all just a product of Steph Curry. Like, that's what it was. I mean, remember, this team was absolutely in the same situation as the Timberwolves were before Curry arrived. And eventually he did, and they changed it over. Now they have a new stadium, and they have new ownership and a new stadium in San Francisco, and they are printing money. Like, they are just, I mean, it's gobs, hand over fist. And so they can afford to pay those big luxury taxes, and that's why I think Andrew will get that money again, because they can afford it, and I don't think that Glenn Taylor can at the moment. But maybe Anthony Edwards turns that around here. Maybe they get their own arena here, and maybe in 5 years we're paying a bunch of luxury tax with Mark Laurie and A-Rod.
As long as I think you'll agree with this, I hope you'll agree with this, it is understood that when he doesn't have to be the best player as often as he was viewed as having to here, he's in a very different situation, in a very different position than he was. That part of it does not go away simply because they probably do not win game five without him.
Absolutely, Dan. Like, there's no question that if he was still being asked to be the number one guy, and if opposing defenses were able to load up on him and double him or make him the priority to take away, it would be the same situation as it was here in Minnesota. And that's why I totally understand Gerson Rosas making that deal. I disagreed at the time, and certainly disagree even more now with the light protections that he put on the pitch.
Yes, that's
ripping. Other things.
Yes.
That's absolutely, but just the notion that this team was going nowhere with a Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins center of their universe. Like, that was not going to work. He was, even if he started rebounding for the Wolves like he did for the Warriors in the finals, it still wasn't going to be enough for them. So they had to make a move and change up the composition of the roster. And Wiggins, had he been traded to Portland or Sacramento or Orlando or any of these other places where he would have been a more featured guy, he probably is not the same player with the same kind of accomplishment in the finals that he is with Curry and Thompson and Green and Jordan Poole. That is absolutely fair game when you talk about how we evaluate where Wiggins is now as a player versus where he was when he was here. But you also did see much more effort, energy, and all of that than we ever saw here on a consistent basis.
Thank you, Johnny. We'll chat next week.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
Johnny Athletic from The Athletic helping us out via the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. Russo Radio to preview Game 3 Stanley Cup Finals. One could argue, well, not even argue, it's just factual. Tampa Bay's last stand. There is no more margin for error, even if you are Stanley Cup immortality and have that equity. And we'll have the top five at five at the top of the hour. When we return, our brief sojourn to the A section for more stupidity.
Fan.
Every once in a while, hosted this show, get an email from somebody, and they'll say, Dan, question for you. Why is it that on your show and elsewhere, even though he's no longer in power, there's still this peculiar obsession with January 6th and Donald J. Trump? And I've tried to explain it a number of different ways. I don't even, to a certain extent, know why I bother, because opinions are so hardened on this sort of issue. It's one of those polarizing categories that I don't think you make much headway with most people, at least not in a way that they're going to be willing to admit publicly. And I say, it's funny you bring that up, emailer guy or emailer gal, because turns out Republicans themselves, leaving aside Trump himself, continue to be obsessed with January 6th. It's not just the Democrats. It's the Republicans. And to that end, I mentioned on Friday night's edition of Enough Said that more than 100 GOP primary winners continued in their victory to back Trump's false fraud claims. In fact, one of the guys who's kind of been lauded as a hero for some of his testimony, Jan 6 hearings, Bill Stepien, former, I think, campaign manager, had some highfalutin title, was quoted several times in his testimony as basically saying, we told the president that there's no there in terms of you, the election got stolen from you. But we come to find out that Stepien is to this day working with candidates who continue to burnish that particular lie, including, I believe, Liz Cheney's opponent. Liz Cheney is you know, her Republican career obviously is going to come to a crashing halt here fairly soon. And then we come to find out this weekend, again, if you're wondering, well, what's this? What's the deal? We got big problems right now. Why are we going down this road? Well, check out what the Texas GOP did over the weekend. Here's the direct quote from the resolution passed by voice vote in Houston Saturday. We reject the certified results of the 2020 presidential election, and we hold that acting president Joe Biden was not legitimately elected by the people of the United States. We strongly urge all Republicans to work to ensure election integrity, and I don't have a problem with that, and to show up to vote in November 2022. Don't have any problem with that either. But then it's to bring your friends and family, volunteer for your local Republicans, and overwhelm any possible fraud. Don't blame me. Don't blame Democrats for the obsession. Too many Republicans won't let go of it. That's part of the reason that it keeps coming up, quite frankly. And we also come to find out on the Sunday shows, Representative Adam Kinzinger, Republican out of Illinois, shared a death threat his family received over his participation in the House Select Committee's investigation of the insurrection. Kinzinger, one of the few Republicans willing to involve himself in it, which is why he's done, or will be done shortly. In fact, I think he's retiring. And he shared via Twitter a letter that was mailed to his home, addressed to his wife, threatening to harm the Republican as well as his wife and child. Warned of the possibility of violence in the future. That's from the representative. Says he's not worried about the threats to him. But it does concern me when my wife and five-month-old child are involved. I've never seen or had anything like that. It was sent from the local area. I don't worry, but now that I have a wife and kids, it's a little different. There are people that there's violence in the future, I'm going to tell you. Until we get a grip on telling people the truth, we can't expect any differently. Kinzinger, one of two Republicans serving on the Select Committee, also alluding to a belief he has that the Republican National Committee is encouraging threats against lawmakers. Darkness is spreading courtesy of cowardly leaders fearful of the truth, he said in his tweet linking to the letter. He's not running for re-election, and he's very concerned about the 2024 elections. We've talked about previously the armed man who was arrested apparently intending, or at least talking, thinking about preparing himself to enter the home of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and to kill him, in part because of the leaked information regarding Roe v. Wade, or the case that's going to very potentially affect Roe v. Wade. Yeah, it's scary stuff that's going on right now. And we certainly have proof that there are folks who feel emboldened by much of the language that is out there, much of the rhetoric that is out there as well. And in this latest case, as we said, this is just a letter. No one has been arrested for a threat outside the representative's home. But it's extremely concerning. And on top of it, as I mentioned, it's this sort of, the thing that's weird to me about this, Gardzi, is that I think, now this is Texas in this case, but it's elsewhere. We mentioned across the country, more than 100 GOP primary winners are doubling down on the fraud claims. And I know that plays to the base. I know it does. I get that. But I'm thinking to myself, the Democrats have lots of points of vulnerability right now. Whether they can be blamed for all or part of it, we start clearly with the economy, inflation, lots of other issues, concerns about violence, etc. I can't think of a more creative way to blunt the Republicans' best chance to reestablish momentum in the fall than to continue to obsess over this particular issue. It's uncanny, and it doesn't seem to be stopping. For the record, also, the Texas platform included a section calling homosexuality, quote, an abnormal lifestyle choice. And you can go for it if you'd like, but I don't know where that's going to leave you. Is it the Log Cabin Republicans? They were denied for the first time in a while, I guess, a booth. They wanted to have, as they usually did, a booth at the state convention in Texas, in Houston, I believe. And they were denied a booth. And you just shake your head and you say, there's a lot of concern among righties about the leftward drift of the Democratic Party and of the progressives. And I get some of that. We push back on a great deal of that as well. But I don't know how you get any more extreme. I really don't. I don't know how you get any more extreme. And if you're interested in, well, leave aside doing the right thing, but you're interested in winning elections, I'm not sure how you're appealing to that broad group of voters. And maybe they don't exist in Texas. I don't know. I used to live there. A lot has changed. I haven't lived there since 86, but how you're appealing to a broad cross-section of the so-called independent voters. The voters are kind of swing a little bit left, a little bit right, and they can be kind of convinced to go either way. I don't know how you get there. Wasting your time with abnormal lifestyle choices. We're just talking again about homosexuality now, according to the Texas GOP. So again, to my friends on the right side, who are concerned about some of the extremists on the left, I say, man, look in your own house. Start there. And beyond that, stop telling me to stop talking about January 6th and about the ramifications of it and the implications of it, because way too many Republicans, they're more obsessed with it than the Democrats, and they're proving it almost every single week, and in this case, weekend. We'll come back with the top five at five. It'll include what?
A hockey game to preview, a Wolves rumor to follow up on, and a big Twins series to start discussing, even though the first game isn't until